This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. It is Fabulous Friday on what is, I can tell you, a spectacular day in Sydney town. It is beautiful, more like summer than autumn, sitting on about 22 degrees, a little bit of wispy cloud in the air, but that's about it. This is the Australian edition of TNT Radio. It is good to have your company as we fly the flag for freedom, as we fight for free speech, and as we expose government overreach. That's what we do here, and it's good to have your company. Today, the criminal behaviour some of the social media platforms refuse to stop, but they're now facing the courts. It is Twiggy versus Zuckerberg in courts in both Sydney and also LA. It's a showdown and a half. We'll get to that very shortly on the program. We'll also get to the day's biggest stories with the help of our regular Friday radio legend, the politically incorrect Jim Ball. He is ready and raring to go. We'll discuss the Prime Minister's green manufacturing launch yesterday and how the Productivity Commission chairperson has smashed it to pieces already. Jim will have his say on a push for tax exemptions for Indigenous Australians, more of the victimhood. And the Bureau issues another climate warning, yes, another one, but for winter. We'll get to all of that with Jim. Next hour, the fiery but very intelligent Queensland Senator Malcolm Roberts. He will be on the program. We'll talk about a damning COVID vaccine report issued by the association representing GPs. So the old conspiracies that had a big red line through them during the pandemic on social media platforms, well, the old conspiracies, would you believe, have turned out to be the truth. And they're now being listed in official mainstream research data from those looking after the GPs in Australia. All of the expected side effects associated with the vaccine are far greater than what they first thought. Isn't that surprising? We'll get to that. Plus, what will Australia do now that the UK has issued this warning over the use of puberty blockers for children who want to change gender? Well, the response here, I've got to say, has been ignorant and silent. Not a word. Now, bear in mind, this is the same backward country where a group of politicians in the Senate couldn't come to an agreement about even having an investigation or an inquiry into puberty blockers. Oh, no, that's too controversial. Let's hide under our desk, as we do just about every second day. That's what they did. So no inquiry on puberty blockers. The United Nations is also one that doesn't want to see what they don't want to see. They don't want any inquiry. But the European Union and the UK have now faced their demons and have come to the agreement that puberty blockers are far too dangerous to use, especially, of course, on children. Where's Australia on all of this? We'll talk to Malcolm about that. And the globalist campaign to eradicate your cash. The only problem is it's not going quite to plan according to what the banks prefer, because people are using cash more than ever before. Isn't that funny? We'll talk to Malcolm Roberts a little bit later. And also, we'll have an expert on digital IDs on the show to explain why the legislation, which has passed the Senate, without debate, mind you, and is about to go to the House of Reps, should be blocked and can be blocked. So we'll talk to him about that a little bit later. And of course, the talkback lines, they are open for you from this very second. Doesn't matter who's on this program. It doesn't matter whether I'm speaking to a very important person, as more my contributors are. You can be part of that conversation. All you got to do is jump in. You can do so from any part of the world, from Canada and the US, 1-888-201-6425. You can call in from the UK, 033-0024-1026, or from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. We don't bite. There's no ceiling on opinion. Let us have it. And you don't have to agree with anything I say, all right? If you want an argument, we can have one of those. It's one of those days. It's Friday, you see, you let your hair down. And we can argue if you like. Jump on those talkback lines. You're with Chris Smith. We're broadcasting live on the Global News Talk Network. This is TNT.
Russia, gas prices, COVID mandates.
It just doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, I've got to say, I've been opening the program at this time every day this week with things that have been fairly heavy, whether it be, you know, transgender puberty blockers or other subjects, some of the hottest topics in the world right now. But while they've generated talkback and generated comments on our chat box and a few emails as well, it is Friday after all. So maybe we take something a little less in your face, but still extremely important. How about we return to the hideous behavior of the social media platforms? Now, you know where I stand on social media platforms. I worry why governments want to intervene and censor what we put on social media, because no one that uses social media believes everything they read. No one. And if you do, well, you're a fool, because many things that you read on social media are made up. Many of them are also opinion. Someone has an opinion based on the facts that they know. You're entitled to do that, the last time I looked, in democratic countries. So I've never understood why governments want to intervene, unless it's, of course, to make sure that the government narrative isn't impacted. So they want to control what we say. Well, that's well and good. But when social media platforms allow distinct and clear criminality to go on within their framework and turn a blind eye, I say this needs to stop. Some of the big tech giants allow you to be scammed, allow you to be deceived, and many of you probably have, without giving a stuff, without responding to complaints in particular, without censoring the criminality. We've all got our stories, whether it's Facebook's fake RM Williams ads that steal your payment and are never taken down, or the cavalcade of celebrities whose words are faked by, at the moment, AI processors, and used to push imaginary products. It is absolutely prolific. It is everywhere, and it's not removed, not taken down. And of course, as we know, social media sites like Meta in particular refuse to abide by the law. They are lawbreakers. They don't follow by the law. They just sit back and watch all of us lose our money. And of course, they continue to collect the ad revenue that the scammers pay, because it's an investment worth making. And they laugh at us. They must laugh at us. You know, there's no phone number you can ring. They don't have a complaint centre. They've got something online that says that you can send a complaint. Have you ever received a reply to that? I haven't, and I've complained a fair few times. Well, here comes the cavalry. In fact, the future of Meta's criminality is at the centre of a legal battle between Meta and Australian billionaire Andrew Twiggy Forrest this very day. Now, this is over a cryptocurrency clickbait advertising scam, which has Twiggy of the set at the centre of the ad campaign. Of course, he didn't know he was. Meta has been told a million times that this is fake, that Twiggy has nothing to do with the product, that the product is also fake, and that he wants his reputation restored. But you see, Facebook is the modern-day mafia, the modern-day mafia. You can't contact them. Your complaints are ignored, and so is the law. They make a profession out of ignoring the law, Facebook. They are the mafia. They are the modern digital mafia. As Nine News explained today, the mining magnate launched a criminal case against the social media giant, accusing it of being criminally reckless in allowing bogus advertisements for a cryptocurrency investment scheme using his image and fake words to appear on its site. Forrest says Meta has blatantly refused to moderate fraudulent content on its platforms. And that's what they do. They do it all the time. They do it continually. They continue to take the ad revenue from all of these scammers and refuse to acknowledge the crimes. Because if you're making $1 million a year out of the scam, what's a few hundred dollars for an ad every day? Who cares? Zuckerberg should be in prison, I would have thought, for the next 50 years. So here's an example of what they have allowed to spread like a virus. And this is what they have been presented with time and time again, showing the evidence, and that evidence has been ignored. Here is Twiggy Forrest firstly. This is the genuine article from a media interview. Have a look.
Guy from a very isolated background. I grew up with a radio connecting me to a school 300 miles away.
Okay, so you saw that. That was real. It was out of his mouth. The words looked in sync with his lips. Well, now with the help of AI, it is very easy to do nowadays, to transform the real into a fake testimonial for scammers.
And you won't believe how incredibly simple it is. You can make money in just 3 minutes.
Did you see that? Now, I'll play it to you again, because if you are not prepared for the fake, so someone doesn't tell you, oh, I'll have a look at this, this is fake, you would just look at that as an outsider and think to yourself, well, he's saying the words. I'm going to play it to you again. Have a look at the fake.
And you won't believe how incredibly simple it is. You can make money in just 3 minutes.
It's BS. Completely fake. AI has extrapolated his voice and they've matched it to his lip movements. That's what AI can do. And it's convincing. The quality of that particular snippet is what lets it down. But when it comes to other celebrities, it's not so slack. It's picture perfect. Now, for all intents and purposes, you would look at that and think, well, hang on, here is an immensely successful entrepreneur validating a cryptocurrency product that will make you lots of money. Looks pretty convincing. And the fake ad has real victims. Now, how do we know if it's got real victims? Well, many of them have confronted Twiggy's company to question his support for the scam. He has been inundated for years by people right around the world saying, what are you doing? I've lost my money. So many small-time investors have lost their hard-earned savings after being lured in by Twiggy's fake testimonial. Of course, it's not Twiggy's doing. Now, for years now, Twiggy Forrest has attempted to reach Meta executives and reach Mark Zuckerberg, but he's got nowhere. He's even gone through the highest level of government, according to him, to seek some justice, or at least the deletion of the fake would be a start, but nothing. Not even governments could cause a change of non-criminal behaviour by Meta. Now, whether you support Twiggy Forrest or not, whether you agree with his green evangelism or not, and I don't, we should support what he's doing in court, which began 2 years ago, mind you. This has been 2 years in the making, to stop vulnerable, innocent people from being smashed by these Meta-sponsored criminal syndicates. I repeat again, Meta is the new form of digital mafia. Now, the matter is listed today in the West Australian District Court. It has just gone midday in Perth, and we don't have any report out of the courtroom. But if I do, I will get it to you as quickly as I can. Now, Channel 9 claims the Commonwealth Director of Public Prosecutions is expected to take over the matter because a private citizen cannot prosecute charges on indictment. And it could also be dismissed. They wouldn't, would they? But bear in mind, the same kind of scam has used not just Twiggy in their criminal ads, but a raft of other prominent Australians, such as Gina Rinehart, Dick Smith, David Koch, Hamish Blake, and more. Unbelievably, Meta has entered pleas of not guilty to the charges, but at least Twiggy has managed to elicit a response from them. That's the only way to do it. You've got to spend your hard-earned and go to court. And spend 2 years with barristers to make it happen. Meanwhile, in 2021, Forrest also launched civil proceedings for the same reason against Facebook in California. The matter in California is also scheduled for an LA courtroom to be heard later today, Californian time. It is crucial that Forrest is successful here because it would be the first legal action of its kind in the world, a massive precedent, to force Meta to be more accountable for fraudulent content on its platforms and stop playing the mafia card. You simply can't take money from the misery and deception of innocent people. But Meta is. And that's exactly what mafia-style empires do. This is TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
These draconian laws which are being imposed on society simply cannot be policed, and that they will just act on their own volition to stop investigating these things. But they have instruction from the SNP government in Scotland that they must investigate every single complaint that is made under this new law, and it simply is not possible to do so. Now, where the people of Scotland have been so good here is that they are filing all kinds of complaints, which are completely ridiculous under normal circumstances. But this is an act of resistance. It is an act of defiance to make people realise that this kind of tyrannical law cannot be implemented and it cannot be sustained.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT radio listeners rely on TNT radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTradio.live.
All right, I want to get to Jim Ball in just a short moment. But before I do that, at the start of this hour, one of my listeners, viewers on TNT Radio got onto our chat box on TNTradio.live and wrote the following. Chris, I have just read on a Telegram channel that China has cancelled 500,000 tons of American wheat and 1,000,000 tons of Australian wheat. The largest contract cancelled on record. Not sure how much truth there is in that. Now, I get a lot of these sorts of things, and it's hard to determine the truth, but I can tell you I've got some information that may be handy for people. This comes from DW, which is always, in my realm, been a fairly reliable source of news. DW writes, on March the 8th, China cancelled a shipment of 240,000 metric tons of US soft red winter wheat. On March the 15th, another batch, this time 264,000 tons, was also cancelled. US exporters were left with the option to either hold on to the 500,000 tons or find alternative buyers. Australian wheat deliveries were also affected in March as Chinese importers either cancelled or postponed around 1 million tonnes of Australian wheat shipments to the second quarter. Now, I would probably have to go back to those dates or prior to those dates to work out what was said publicly or internationally that was against China's narrative and that maybe that this is the way that they lash out. But I don't know. I can't do that right now, and I'd have to go through tooth and comb to try and find out some kind of link. But why would this happen? Andrew Whitelaw, an agricultural consultant with Market Analyst Episode 3 in Canberra, referred to the cancellation of cargoes as bearish indicator. Whether they are doing it to buy again cheaper or because there's less demand, it is still a bearish view on the market. He was speaking to Bloomberg. The fact that over 500,000 tons of US wheat was cancelled has sparked much discussion among grain traders. Are they up to their old tricks, the Chinese? Are they about to use the importation of wheat against the United States and Australia over something? Is it over membership to AUKUS, which, of course, they've indicated they want to be part of? Because now we're considering including Japan and Canada. Could it be that they are protesting against that and they're holding on to or refusing to take this wheat until something more is done about their wishes to join AUKUS? I don't know. That's complete and utter supposition on my behalf, but it is very curious indeed. Let's get to the former National Nighttime Radio Talkback King on 2GB and 2UE. He's been on the program regularly on a Friday. We love having him here because you can look back at the week that was as well. He is the most politically incorrect. Jim Ball, welcome back to TNT.
Thank you, Chris. And we can feel winter or autumn in the air. It's just somebody's flicked a switch and it's just gone all breezy and rather chilly, particularly in the mornings. Just listening to that bit with Andrew Forrest, I saw an AI the other day and they said, this is a fake. It was Kerry Lake, the Arizona,
yep,
she ran for governor and didn't win. Yep. She said, this is me talking, but it is a fake. And fair dinkum, you couldn't tell. No. So I'm anticipating that whether it be in America or Australia or Britain, I think you're going to see AI and that sort of lip syncing and all of that stuff. I think you're going to see a lot more of that in election campaigns.
My media mates in Canberra tell me that there are some very, very high profile female reporters in Canberra who have had some extortion attempts thrown at them using similar AI adjusted vision of them doing things that they never ever did.
I can read between the lines. I've heard of this, scary stuff.
Scary stuff. Well, I couldn't believe my ears yesterday, Jim, when I listened to what the Australian Prime Minister had to say about restoring manufacturing to Australia. In his green bent announcement titled The Future Made in Australia, Albo made lots of motherhood statements and how Australia should play to its strengths without much detail at all. Here's an example from the ABC.
We can make more things here. We can compete with the world. We need to identify where Australia has a comparative advantage, such as in green hydrogen, producing green steel and green aluminium, producing batteries as well. And we need as well to look at our national sovereignty and where we need to ensure that we can stand on our own two feet. We can't be vulnerable. That is one of the lessons of the global pandemic.
No, there are other lessons of the pandemic, but we'll leave that aside for the time being. Boy, oh boy, Jim Bawley's all yours.
Well, Chris, I thought Utopia, Rob Sitch's Utopia, was a satire, but here it is. It's come to life. Coming from anybody else, somebody serious that you could take seriously, I'd say, well, I'm on board with that. I'd like to see more things made here. We don't make anything anymore. We're more of a service-oriented. We're not industrial. Everything comes out of China. How that's going to pan out in some sort of kinetic war over Taiwan, who the hell knows? But let's call it, well, the acronym I think he was aiming at there was, let me think, M-A-G-A, MAGA, Make Australia Great Again. I think that's what he's aiming at.
Yeah.
But I think also, well, first of all, the clunky, and I mean really clunky sounding Future Made in Australia Act. Is that the extent of the imagination of the bureaucrats who came up with this? But let's call it, give it an acronym it really deserves. That is BNDL for boondoggle, right? Now, boondoggle, that's in the dictionary. It's an acronym. It's a word. It's defined as an unnecessary, wasteful, or fraudulent project.
Yeah.
You hear it a lot, particularly, again, from America. You don't hear it. It's an American word, but that's what a boondoggle, that's what it means, and that's what this is. And whenever we read about government, we should all be very, very worried, because only the totalitarian, all-controlling left thinks that bigger equals better.
Yeah.
Whether it's more money for teaching and you get a worse result, or more money for anything and you get more money for cops, police, and you get more crime. It never works out. Just look at the scoreboard in just the last, I don't know, 12, 18 months, 2 years. Snowy 2.0. Now, and think in the context of what his announcement was about and how governments shouldn't be involved at all. Snowy 2.0, pink bats, defense acquisitions, submarines, whatever, helicopters, aircraft. The dog's breakfast, that is energy policy, renewable energy, and the new renewable energy grid. The one that was revealed last week, well, we knew about it, but I'd forgotten about it, was the inland rail from Melbourne to Brisbane.
Yeah.
It is only 17% complete, 320 Ks out of 1,600. It's due to be completed in 3 years, in 2027, right? And wouldn't you know it, it's $20 billion over budget. I mean, that's nosebleed stuff. $20 billion.
That's what governments do when they get their hands on things they shouldn't have their hands on.
That's right. Well, they've got their hands on something, but...
that's right, very firmly.
And of course, we're not supposed to notice any of this. Like The Voice, this is really about a big distraction. And, well, I think they call in political circles the announceables. you know, what can we do? What sizzle can we sell? Forget the sausage. What sizzle can we announce? And what they call in, as I said, in political circles, announceables to try and fire up the imagination of the electorate. Interesting, too, that it's been likened to Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which I think is pretty stupid, because if you're going to be spending a lot of money and assume, well, and they're, as they're doing at the moment with the Inland Rail and everything else, Snowy 2.0 and so on, that's going to feed inflation, unless it's productive infrastructure and you can do it on time and on budget. That's going to feed inflation.
Yeah.
It's not going to reduce inflation. But this is Albo trying to project an image of a can-do, dynamic can-do prime minister. And it's a can-do dynamism. It's betrayed by the fact that they're averse to and resistant to nuclear energy. Now, if you were going to make Australia green, no emissions, right, you'd say, well, first step, nuclear energy, let's do it. That's you hit the pause button, or the mute button. Caught you.
No, there was no noise. I didn't need it.
But you'd introduce nuclear. That would be your, people would take you seriously.
Yeah.
If you said, we're going to do this, we're going to be 21st century, blah, blah, you'd introduce nuclear as your first step. Mm-hmm. And people would say, wow, they mean business. But yeah. Here he was, I heard him in that clip, talking about green aluminium and green steel, hydrogen.
Stop.
And like, okay, maybe that's down the track. They say that nuclear, we can't have that because we're starting from scratch. Well, what the hell? I mean, we're not, because it's right around the world. What the hell is this hydrogen steel green thing? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Ronald Reagan, years ago, he had a number of quotes. One was, as he said, the most terrifying nine words in the English language. I'm here from the government. I'm here to help. Or the other one, Canberra, was Kevin Rudd. I'm Kevin from Canberra. And he's before he was prime minister at the annual knees up for the Labor Party.
Yeah.
But his best line, Reagan's best line, relates to the Albo announcement. And it's this, when Reagan said, government is not the solution to your problems. Government is the problem. And that's the problem.
Yeah,
they're not the solution. They are the problem.
He wants to create industry and jobs that are totally and utterly inefficient and relying on subsidies,
and which will fall over because bureaucrats are involved and they can't even get the name right. The point is this, Chris: they've got a meddling bureaucracy, and governments have got to get out of the way and just let the market do what it does. Let the market rip. Simple.
Exactly. I want to talk about a dozen other things, but we'll do that after a quick news break. I've got to get people an update, and I'll come back with you, Jim Ball. Let's go to the newsroom on TNT.
Big news?
We do have some big news.
TNT Radio News.
Big news.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The Australian Labor government, under Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, plans to introduce direct economic interventions to foster local manufacturing and develop sovereign green energy supply chains in Australia. Three sons of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh were killed in an Israeli airstrike in the Gaza Strip, as confirmed by both the Palestinian group and Haniyeh's family. The Israeli military, acknowledging the strike, identified the three as members of Hamas's armed wing.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Yeah, good to have you with us. 24/7, we're live, and it's fantastic to have you on board. Just in reference to my comments at the start about this Twiggy Forest versus Meta showdown in courts in Sydney and also in LA within this 24-hour period, Lou is not convinced. Lou says Facebook and the government are the same. Twiggy isn't doing this for vulnerable people. Laugh out loud. Suck it up, Twig, he says. Meta sucks, no doubt about that, but Twigster ain't no hero, please. Well, Lou, you better hope that Twiggy, who you obviously dislike, and there are things about what Twiggy says that I dislike immensely, especially his green evangelism, you better hope that he wins for millions of people who are continually ripped off by the social media giants, in particular Facebook. Let's get back to Jim Ball. Jim, as the official journals of the medical world begin to admit dangerous disease-initiated flaws in the COVID vaccines, and we'll talk about that later in the program, we now hear of more health dangers, this time in our drinking water. Apparently, a forever chemical recently declared carcinogenic is allowed in Australia's tap water at 140 times the maximum level the US now considers safe. In a press conference this week, the White House also paid tribute to young Minnesota woman, Amara Strander, who led a deathbed crusade to outlaw forever chemicals before she died from liver cancer at the age of 20. This is all featured in an upcoming documentary. Who can we trust anymore if our water is that crook for us?
Yeah. Well, I'm no scientist, and when I first read this morning, I went to Dr. Google to find out what the hell are forever chemicals. Once I heard the word, I thought, oh, yeah, they're chemicals that just stay with us forever. They're indestructible. And that's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
140 times the maximum level in the US. That's not marginal. That's monstrous.
Mm.
And what happened to trust the science and the experts, Chris? I recall that from the days of the pandemic.
Mm.
Which science and which experts do we trust? I mean, someone is wrong. 140 times now, America's done something right, or Australia's done something wrong, or both are wrong. Mm. I have no idea. And as the name implies, these things, as I said, they're known as forever chemicals because they are with us forever. The one thing I couldn't find out, I found out what they are used for. These forever chemicals, and they've got some chemical name. They were developed by 3M, Minnesota yep. Mining Company in Minnesota. They're used in food packaging, pizza boxes, food wrappers, takeout containers, nonstick pans, Teflon, firefighting foam, stain-proof and waterproof clothing, outdoor gear, umbrellas, and that kind of thing. And it makes these consumer goods water, stain, and grease resistant. But I just don't understand how that feeds into water. Why is it in the water supply?
And can we take it out?
And that's right. Can we take it out? So we're left to wonder, is anyone like, I don't know, the CSIRO on top of this or even aware of it? Is it a federal thing? Is it a state thing? I have no idea. How could such a difference not raise a few red flags?
Yeah.
And it's also worth noting too that Australia has banned only, apparently, there are 14,000 of these forever chemicals in circulation. Australia has only banned 3, as in 1, 2, 3 of 14,000, right?
Yeah.
And according to that piece in the Sydney Morning Herald today, I'm just reading this here, under the US EPA's new rules, water providers must ensure levels of the forever chemicals, and it's their name there, in drinking water, do not exceed 4 parts per trillion. It's a stark comparison to Australia's drinking water guidelines, which allows 70 parts per trillion. And like I said, the other thing, Chris, I don't know what the hell this stuff is doing in the water supply. Mm. I read out just now what it's used for, carpets and furniture, textiles, window treatments, to make them grease and water resistant, stain resistant. So what that's got to do with water, I can't make the link, and I couldn't find anything. It wasn't an in-depth search. I'm sure must be something on there, but why are they in the water supply?
Yeah, it's a good question. There is a documentary coming up at the end of the month that is
28th of April, yes, on Stan.
Yeah, on Stan, it's worth watching. I've just got some news I wanted to share with our viewers here. A West Australian former reporter, now working for the United Nations Children's Fund, is lucky to be alive after being shot at in Gaza. Tess Ingram, who worked for the Australian Financial Review's Perth Bureau and then the masthead, the Sydney Morning Herald, I can tell you was in a UNICEF vehicle waiting to enter the north of Gaza when it was hit by live ammunition. The three UNICEF and UNRWA cars were in convoy on a coordinated mission to deliver fuel to water wells in the north and life-saving nutrition and medical supplies as well. They left Rafah after some delays, got to a holding point before the checkpoint at Wadi Gaza, to a designated holding point where UN vehicles were made to wait until the checkpoint is ready to receive them. "We were waiting there when gunfire broke out in the vicinity," Ingram said. "The gunfire came from the direction of the checkpoint towards civilians, who then ran away from the checkpoint, and the gunfire hit us. We were really lucky. We had some colleagues outside of the car checking a mechanical problem with the nutrition truck. But three bullets hit the car that was in right on my passenger door window. I tell you what, it's not a safe place to be. No conflict is. But it's also not safe to be any kind of humanitarian worker either, Jim."
And will that story get the same coverage as the story where Israel was at the holding the gun or dropping the bomb at that point?
Yeah.
Will this get the same kind of coverage? I very much doubt it.
No. All right, there's been a call from the Socialist Republic of Australia, Victoria, for Indigenous Australians to receive a tax exemption. Prominent Aboriginal elder Auntie Jill Gallagher said Indigenous people should not be required to pay land taxes or council rates as part of government treaty negotiations. Some advocates just want to prolong this Indigenous victimhood, don't they?
They certainly do. Look, this is just another form of reparations. That's what it is. I think, like most people, Chris, I'm becoming increasingly irritated by these race and grievance hustlers, and that's what they are.
Yeah.
After a free ride and free money. That's what they want, to be recompensed for a loss they haven't experienced. That's the point. And interestingly, it comes in the same week as similar demands were made in America by one of their black leaders. Reparations payable to whom, by whom, how much, and for what? Mm. They're the key questions. And on the other side, what have they gained in terms of material benefits? But I want to approach this from the, you know, I read something years and years and years ago. It's called the But For Thesis. How would their lives have been different but for England, Captain Cook, Philip, and the rest of them coming here and settling Australia? How would their lives have panned out? By way of analogy, take a straightforward workplace accident, right? Just an ordinary accident. Your damages are measured by what your situation would be like if that accident hadn't happened in the first place.
Mm.
That's how your damages would be measured.
Yeah, yeah.
But in the case of this elder, auntie, whatever her name
auntie
was.
Auntie Gallagher.
Gallagher, and Aboriginals more broadly, they are better off than they would have been if white settlement hadn't happened.
Of course, right? Of course.
So in effect, and I've written some notes to myself here, so in effect, she wants, because it's complicated, it's not simple, it's simple, but it's complicated. So in effect, she wants a benefit for when she hasn't experienced a loss. She wants to be rewarded for being better off than she would have been.
Got that? Well explained, yeah.
Take, now, and this may sound cruel, but I don't mean to be, take American slavery, for example. Using the same rationale as this thesis, and say that but for an event happening to you that left you better off, why should you be paid reparations, or what would the circumstances of the descendants of slavery been like had there been no transatlantic slavery? Those people would be still in Africa.
Yep.
Right? So they're net beneficiaries. They'd be existing in Africa. And so the next question is, what would their comparative quality of life been? And what would their fate have been? Better than now or worse? Well, I think we know the answer to that. I think the Congo, Rwanda, Zimbabwe, for example. And compared to the overall quality of life in the West and the entire logic underpinning the reparations argument, and that's what we're talking about, make no mistake, it's nothing else. All that falls away because life in the West with all its problems in 2024 is a damn sight better than life in Africa in 2024.
Sure is.
In the wash-up on the balance sheet of life, descendants of slaves, yes, the descendants, I'm not saying the slaves themselves, but, and the Australian Aboriginals have been net beneficiaries. It is pretty straightforward. But for the settlement of Australia, right, but for the settlement of Australia by the British or the French or the Dutch or the Portuguese or whoever it would have been, because it would have happened, life would be exactly as it was 250 years ago. And there was Thomas Hobbes wrote in his book Leviathan years ago that the life of man back then was solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. And one more thing, Muhammad Ali in the 1970s, he had the rumble in the jungle with George Foreman. And he came back to America and he was asked what it was like. And he said, I'm glad my grandfather got on that boat.
Yeah.
Right? Because he's obviously a slave, or maybe it was his great grandfather. But look, we've had this what's closing the gap? Well, that's a form of reparations, saying, look, we've screwed up. We're trying to make good. That's a form of reparations, right?
Maybe these Indigenous communities should be paying their landlords in their new country for taking them in and giving them an exceptional opportunity and a new way of life.
Yeah. But yeah, whinge, always was, always will be. Whinging all. That's pretty much it. Look, you take the likes of ATSIC, that was another instrumentality. A person born in Australia in, say, the 1970s and 1980s, tell us, what's your problem? What have you lost that you never had? The point is, Chris, you cannot prove a counterfactual. You can't say, well, we were robbed.
Good point.
What were you robbed? Well, I was born in 1980 and I went to school. What were you robbed of? You were robbed of nothing. You cannot prove a counterfactual. Simple as that.
Yeah, well said. Great argument. You should bottle that one. I like that.
All right.
It is a beautiful afternoon in Sydney. We've mentioned that. A cool start to the morning. I get up and go to the gym early and I needed a jumper today. But we've had a burst of summer during the day. It's about 21 degrees at the moment. And I don't know whether global boiling is at work at this time of the year, Jim, but the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia said today that it will be one of the warmest winters on record. Did I not hear in about September or October last year that we were about to have the hottest, most catastrophic natural disaster sequence during the summer of 23-24?
Oh, God, you've got to love them, haven't you? Look, I imagine everyone, maybe not everyone, has heard of the prophet of doom, Jeremiah. He lived about 650 BC, but it seems he's alive and well and working at the Bureau of Meteorology. The Jeremiahs of the bomb, the Bureau, and the end of the world doom boosters are at it again. The entire climate cult, you've got to categorize them as being made up of nothing but Jeremiahs. The world's going to end. You know, the sky is falling. It's Chicken Little running around. For the sake of the argument, let's say they're right and this winter is going to be warmer.
Oh, good.
Fantastic. So what? Warm is better than cool.
Yeah.
And look, on the 11th of May, we're hitting the road going up to North Queensland for a couple of months. So we'll be doing the program from there in the caravan.
Great.
But most people would prefer a warm winter. And apparently the temperatures threatened to surpass last year's benchmark, just reading it here, warmest winter since records began in 1910. Average daily temperatures were 1.53 degrees centigrade above the long-term winter average in 2023, according to the Bureau data, and every winter since 2012 has been warmer than the 30-year average. But look, this is convenient, but it conveniently overlooks the fact that the bomb has been cooking the books anyway.
Yeah.
Right, with their what they call temperature homogenization.
Yeah.
Cooling temperatures from 100 years ago to make today's temperatures look warmer. That's what this is about. This is adjusting and cooling the temperatures from then to make it a little warmer today. It's real pea and thimble stuff. It's three-card Monty stuff. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And in the last 150 years, the temperature has risen plus or minus 1.5 degrees. And you know something? Absolutely no one has noticed.
No, of course not.
Wait, there is more. There is more. We missed this in the paper today. In today's Oz, the UN's climate chief has warned that there are 2 years to save the world and urged Britain and other rich nations to produce stronger plans to cut emissions. This guy's name is Simon Steele. I'll be candid. Blame shifting is not a strategy, he said. Sidelining climate isn't a solution to a crisis that will decimate every G20 economy and has already started to hurt. Chris, I remember, I don't know if you remember, I'm sure you do, dozens of quotes since about the 1970s. Here are some recent, saying the world's going to, here's a couple of recent ones. Climate change is real. It's happening right now. It is the most urgent threat facing our entire species, and we need to work collectively together and stop procrastinating. That well-known scientist, Leonardo DiCaprio. We don't have time to sit on our hands. Our planet burns. For young people, climate change is bigger than election or re-election. It's life or death. That's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, US politician. And finally, from everyone's favorite climate psycho, adults keep saying we owe it to the young people to give them hope. But I don't want your hope. I don't want you to be hopeful. I want you to panic. I want you to feel the fear I feel every day. I want you to act. I want you to act as if you were in a crisis. I want you to act as if your house is on fire, because it is. And that, of course, is Greta Thunberg.
Greta, fantastic. And there we are at the moment, spending trillions on reducing CO2, and the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere has only increased, Jim. Maybe what we're doing is not the way to go about it.
Well, that's true. I mean, first of all, China and India, they're the big drivers, and they're not doing anything. They're just thumbing their nose. Yeah. This is all about the managed decline of Western economies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is.
We're already wrecking our economy by trying to chase our backside. It's ridiculous. You have a fabulous weekend, mate. Good to have you on the program.
Thanks, Chris. All right.
Thank you.
See you next week.
Jim Ball, good to have him as a regular on our program on a Friday afternoon. Thank you so much to him, and thank you very much for those who have sent replies and lots of comments about what we've been talking about. Yeah, plenty of comments, but jump on that talkback line. We'll put you on air and have your say. And the numbers are from the US or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-00-24-1026. Or from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Plenty more to come. Don't go anywhere. We've got to take a break right here on TNT.
I said, could she die? And the doctor said she could. It was so scary.
When I started clawing at my neck and trying to breathe, and I thought, you know, what are we going to do if I die here? How's everyone going to go on?
When someone's gravely sick or injured in the bush, they rely on the Royal Flying Doctor Service. But now the Flying Doctor needs your help to fund vital medical equipment and supplies. Please search Flying Doctor online to give a regular gift of just $10. You can help equip the Flying Doctor's teams to respond to any emergency anywhere. Search Flying Doctor online. Become a part of the Royal Flying Doctor Service and help save lives in the bush.
I'm Sandra, this is Jorge, and we were adopted in 2019. I remember when they first came to us, Michael was already a teenager. The whole cliche of, they're so lucky to have you guys, and it's the other way around. They have changed our family for the better. They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Thank you for your comment, Jack, about Jim Ball. Yes, award-winning stuff. He really knows how to put an argument succinctly, and especially on reparations there. What have you lost or have you gained? And maybe it is, as I've suggested, that the reparations need to be paid to the new landlords. Anyway, I'm only joking, of course. All right, I want to get to this. This involves EVs, and it's a real insight into demand and supply at the moment around the world. We know what's happening in the United States and the UK and Europe. Demand is overdoing supply when it comes to electric vehicles. The bubble has burst. Well, in Sydney, and this is from Computer Daily News today, a biannual survey by the Institute of Transport and Logistics Studies has revealed 4% of Australians own or have ordered an electric vehicle. 9% are thinking of buying one in the next 12 months, and a further 27% are considering it in the next 5 years. But 44% say they cannot afford an electric vehicle. And the remaining 15% say they can afford one, but are not interested. According to Professor David Hentscher, director of ITLS, he says this survey shows there remains a challenge to improving the affordability of electric vehicles and convincing more than half of Australians they are an alternative to your standard internal combustion engines. He said the main issues for transport were increasing pressure on the road system with population growth and more home deliveries. Interesting. Yeah, we're getting to the stage now where the bubble has burst on EVs. It's static because the prices don't come down. Now, if you want, as a government, you can pay for everyone's vehicle until you start to go more broke than what you already have after the pandemic. But it's ridiculous. They simply don't have the infrastructure suited to be able to charge something in far-flung places to be able to keep going. That is unworkable. It is impractical, especially in big countries like Australia. So the same kind of reticence is occurring in Australia. We're probably lagging behind the rest of the world, but Australia does on so many issues. We lag by about 4 or 5 years. And the same thing's happening with EVs, but the slow up in demand on EVs in Australia has begun. It's well and truly underway in the United States, the UK, and of course, Europe. All of that is interesting. Now, I want to talk about Gaza for a second. I made mention of the Australian aid worker whose vehicle was shot at. Lucky she's still alive. This broke about an hour and a half ago. But Benjamin Netanyahu today vowed to harm anyone who attacks Israel amid fears that Iran is poised to launch an unprecedented direct missile attack on its old enemy. Now, I've read several articles related to this today, and it seems as if the intelligence suggests and universally is agreed to that this attack may happen in the next 48 hours. So the likelihood is that we will wake up one day over the weekend, an attack has occurred. Now, what Israel will do after that, you can bet won't be soft. It won't be feeble. It will exacerbate the war, undoubtedly. The Israeli Prime Minister said, whoever harms us, we will harm them. After US intelligence officials warned that Tehran is preparing a strike that could plunge the Middle East into a new war. Israeli jets carried out drills simulating a strike on Iran, local media reported, while Western and Arab diplomats scrambled to persuade the Islamic Republic against military action. So you've got Western and Arab diplomats on the phone, working the phones hard to try and calm Iran down. How successful will that be? I doubt very successful at all. Elite Iranian forces based in Syria have moved into civilian hotels in anticipation of Israeli blowback, security sources told the UK Telegraph. Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari, Israel's chief military spokesman, said civilians were not being told to make any special preparations, but added the country was highly prepared for a range of scenarios. On Thursday, Annalena Baerbock, Germany's foreign minister, urged maximum restraint in a call with her Iranian counterpart. Senior US Republicans demanded that Joe Biden order the military to join Israel in a devastating response to any Iranian attack. So the Republicans are pretty keen to up the ante on this war and to ensure that somehow the response to any kind of Iranian attack is massive. Ayatollah Khomeini, Iran's supreme leader, promised revenge for the killing of senior generals in an Israeli drone strike in Damascus in April. He said on state TV, the evil regime must be punished and it will be punished. So I don't know where this is going to go. We're dealing in some very, very irrational individuals that hold the fate of the world in their hands. That is the biggest problem. I noticed that Penny Wong is trying to play a role in all of this. Penny Wong has spoken with her Iranian counterpart, saying Australia is deeply concerned by signs the Middle Eastern country is planning a military strike on Israel. As if anyone cares what Penny Wong or the Australian government has to say. Where is Australia, is what most people in the Middle East will say. Where is Australia? She voiced her worries as the federal government updated its travel advice for Israel. The government's latest travel advice for Israel in the occupied Palestinian territory says Aussies should reconsider their need to travel. It warns there is an increased threat of military and terrorist attacks against Israel and Israeli interests across the region. Wong said on the social media platform X, formerly known as Twitter, she had spoken overnight with Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian. She urged the Iranian government to use its influence in the region to promote stability, not contribute to escalation. I doubt whether anyone will be listening to Penny Wong. This is Chris Smith on TNT.